Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Really, 007.
James Bond is coming back to the big screen in cinemas in the UK, and we're hoping to go to every one of the 25 films. Join us as we celebrate the 60th anniversary of our favourite British agents by watching them all in order. We hope you guys are watching them too, so please let us know your thoughts. You can find us on social media at Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, and our podcast is available on iTunes and Spotify, as well as video episodes on YouTube. Simply search for Really 007 Pod. Daniel Craig returned for his difficult second album in Quantum of Solace.
I was always very interested to meet you. I'd heard so much about you from Vesper. If she hadn't killed herself, we would have had you too.
Are you going to tell us who you work for?
The first thing you should know about us is that we have people everywhere.
I thought I could trust you. You said you weren't motivated by revenge.
I'm motivated by my duty.
I think you're so blinded by inconsolable rage that you don't care who you hurt. When you can't tell your friends from your enemies, it's time to go.
You don't have to worry about me.
Restrict Bond's movements. Put a stop on his passport. Find Bond.
How long have I got?
30 seconds.
That doesn't give us a lot of time.
Telling that I am at the Berry View in the Rock by myself for Quantum of Solace, because it's possibly the least popular Bond film. Maybe some might say Spectre or No Time to Die, but I think they've got maybe more fans. They've got more haters perhaps too, but Quantum was certainly my least favourite Bond film until I saw it again a couple of years ago, and I thought, goodness me, this is way better than I gave it credit for. I think part of the problem was that after Casino Royale, which I wasn't really keen on the direction it took, when I saw that for the first time at the cinema, I was just like, I didn't really go into it with the right attitude, and I was like, oh no, more of the same, isn't it? I didn't like the fact that it was set directly after the end of Casino Royale, because that was a bit too different for me. You know, I'm a traditionalist. And when I watched it, I didn't really understand the plot. I couldn't really make head and tail of what was going on. The characters didn't seem particularly interesting. I didn't like the main villain. I couldn't believe again there's no sort of proper Bond girl because he's still moping about Vesper. So that was a big put off. It was very short, but it didn't really feel that short at the time, and I just thought, I can't believe this. I watched this on my own, because I don't know whether Math and Harry were at uni, but I don't know whether they even wanted to watch it. And yeah, and then I didn't watch it until it was released on DVD. I had exactly the same problems again, and I thought, right, what a depressing film. And I've probably been slagging it off for quite a few years ever since then, until I watched it just before lockdown perhaps, and I sat there and I thought, hey, I've not seen this in, goodness me, possibly 10 years. It's like a bonus Bond for me. Let's go into it with the right attitude and try and enjoy it and see the merits in it. And you know what? I loved it. And I felt so embarrassed almost to tell people, like, dare I admit that I like Quantum of Solace? Dare I admit that I think this is actually a pretty cosy, crisp film? And one of the main reasons for that is the locations and the way it all plods along. It's so much frenetic action, which clearly is influenced by Bourne. I don't know if they've got the same fight coordinators for that. But it just, I love the sort of hue of it. I love the cinematography, much like Casino Royale. It just looks rich. And I love Mathis. Okay, the way he goes out and the way Bond treats him is still awful in my eyes. Maybe not, don't say it as badly as Rob, but still pretty poor. And then I thought, hang on, you know, it does make a bit more sense. I'm not fully in, you know, he has Strawberry Fields, so there is a bit more of an interaction with the Bond girl. There's a little bit more human than I remembered. And then, you know, there's an end fight with a baddie. And I think that's the first and only time we've had that in a Daniel Craig film, until he has one with Safin in that paddling pool. So I'm like, yeah, and it's a bad. And I love the opera scene. So I'm going into this really buoyed, really looking forward to it. I enjoyed Casino Royale last week. It would be great to try and see all the Daniel Craigs in a row on the big screen and hope that they sort of come through as more of a story. Because I know they didn't intend them to go exactly the way they did, but no film series does. And they're reacting to the time. And I just want to enjoy this, sit back. I'm a lone voice, I think, in the Really 007 crew for liking this film. Although Rob has interestingly warmed to it a bit. So I'm very, very interested to hear everyone's thoughts on this. But I'm going in now. Wish me luck.
Hey, it's Sam here. I've just finished work. I'm about to go to the cinema to watch Quantum of Solace. I'm going to try and hold off my negative thoughts about this film until I've seen it again. I did watch it a few months ago in the run-up to No Time to Die, and I really did not have a great experience. The only time I had a good experience was the first time that I saw it at the cinema, which was in 2008. I saw it with my cousin Luca, and we watched the film. I think we thought it was good, but I mean, I was 13, he was 11. I think we enjoyed the action, but the actual story and just the vibe of the film just didn't gel with me. And just over the years, it's gone down quite significantly. I think back in the day when there was 22 films, I said it was 20th, and then that quickly went down, and now it's actually at the bottom of my list. So I know that there are Quantum defenders out there, and do you know what, I wish I was, because you know, I would love to enjoy this film more than I do, but unfortunately I don't. And every time I see it now, it just seems to be worse for me. And you know, I'm hoping that the cinema experience again will allow me to enjoy it more. And there's certain elements that I do enjoy, but you know, controversially, I enjoy the title song, and I like the titles, even though they aren't done by Daniel Kleiman. You know, I like the difference there. I enjoy the car chase to an extent, but it's not the best chase for me. So really, I love the first, you know, 5, you know, or so minutes. And then for me, the rest of it's just kind of a bit of a slog. I used to think this was the longest Bond film, and it's really not, but I used to think it dragged on for so much. So yeah, I'm really not the most positive about this one, but I'm going to watch it. I'm going to see how it does, see if any elements stick out. I think some of the acting's good. I think some of the cast are okay. Some of the others I'm not too fond of. Some of the choices, storyline choices, I know people are going to bring up the writer's strike, and I understand that. But at the end of the day, if they were so worried about the plots and how it was going to work, then really they should have just pushed it back a little bit to allow just for more time. But it does feel like a bit of a rushed thing, and I think it makes it a bit messy. I say a bit messy, I think it's a lot messy. I'm not a massive fan of Mark Forster and his direction, the editing especially, I'm not a fan of. And yeah, some of the production choices I'm not a fan of either. So I mean, I think David Arnold scores okay. It's not a particular memorable one for me, but I think it's good for what it is. If, for his last one thus far, you never know, he could come back. Yeah, and yeah, a lot of people have said that Daniel Craig looks great, and I think he does look good in this film. Probably not my favorite look of his, but he definitely looks fitting and he looks good. I think as a film, as a sequel, I think it's good. You know, as a sequel to Casino Royale, it's good, but as just a James Bond film, I think it's a very difficult watch, especially if you've not seen Casino Royale in a while, or if you're just watching Quantum of Solace for just a random reason. I think it's very difficult if you've not just watched Casino Royale. So for those who didn't watch it at the cinema last week, I think it may be a bit more difficult, but who knows. But yeah, so I'm going to head off now. Hopefully I'll have some good vibes and some good thoughts to share later. But yeah, I do hope everyone enjoys.
You're going to tell us who you work for?
I was always very interested to meet you. I'd heard so much about you from Vesper. The real shame is that if she hadn't killed herself, we would have had you too. I think you would have done anything for her.
Well, you know you're not in Britain, and God knows where you'll be tomorrow. Which should tell you that eventually you will tell us about the people you work with. And the longer it takes, the more painful we'll make it.
You really don't know anything about us. It's so amusing because we are on the other side thinking, oh, the MI6, the CIA, they're looking over our shoulders, they're listening to our conversations, and the truth is you don't even know we exist.
Well, we do now, Mr. White. And we're quick learners.
Oh, really? Well, then, the first thing you should know about us is that we have people everywhere. Am I right?
Hello everybody, this is Dom here, giving my thoughts on Quantum of Solace. For me, this is a Bond film that I would really like to enjoy. However, it falls down in a few key areas and therefore is almost at the bottom of the James Bond rankings, if not rock bottom. The things I like about this film are Camille the Bond girl. I know that Bond doesn't sleep with her in this, but it works because they're both on separate missions to get revenge and end up working together to complete the missions. Where I feel it falls down for me is the action scenes. They are far too quick, you can't see what's going on. It's a bit like what they've done with the Jason Bourne films, but much worse, and I prefer to watch Jason Bourne films over this one. The beginning starts with a few moments after Casino Royale ends, with Bond in the tunnel driving the Aston trying to escape the people that Mr. White worked for, but they fail to get him back and Bond kills them and makes it to Siena. I really hate the pre-title song, Another Way to Die. It's just a terrible Bond song. Jack White and Alicia Keys have not done it justice. It's even behind Madonna's Dawn of the Day, in my opinion. The pre-titles, though, by MK12 are quite colourful with bold lettering, and it's probably the highlight of the opening credits, to be honest. It makes a difference to what we've seen in the past, and it really futurizes it. I still think it holds up well even today. The title cards, wherever they are on location, is stupid. They're done in a stupid font and they shouldn't take up the whole screen. I really hate the villain, even though we share the same name, unfortunately, but he's just terrible. His scheme, while being realistic with the water supply in Bolivia, is just not done that well. He's just a bad businessman who doesn't have any unique features. Maybe if General Medrano was the main villain instead, then it will give it more solidity. The film just goes at a ridiculously stupid pace and it's hard to keep up with it. By the end, I'm still not sure what has happened, even though Bond has got his revenge for the death of Vesper. It seems that every time somebody dies in this film, Bond is blamed, and not in a nice way, but he must carry on to achieve his targets. Medrano is not such a good character. I don't even know if he's the actual villain or a henchman, but he's not really that rememberable, to be honest, in my opinion. The scene in the hotel room with the bar lady is just terrible. It's a bit too dark for a Bond film, and that's coming from somebody that's seen Milton Crest's head explode. Elvis the henchman is just awful as well. He has a stupid haircut. The chief of police is also a weak character, and it's hard to tell where Mathis gets killed by who is the culprit of that. It's the first appearance for the series of Tanner. I'm not such a huge fan of this Tanner, Rory Kinnear. He's more of a stage actor than an actual film actor, but he does get more credit as he does more films. He's probably overused in this film, a bit like in The World Is Not Enough, just not as well done. I don't know why she has to go out to Bolivia to intercept Bond, just stay in the MI6, a stupid woman. Send out some MI6 people like License to Kill, where Bond's tied to that stone table-y thing. I do enjoy M's performance in this when she's always on the screen, but she just tries to play the investigator a bit more, and is a bit more involved as well with warming to the new Bond, Daniel Craig. In a way, it's a bit like License to Kill, because Bond kills the member of Special Branch and tries to intercept Green. Well, he does, but his card's blocked by MI6, basically, so he has to use his own means to get there. The Haiti boat chase is poorly directed, like all the action scenes in this film. You can't tell what's going on. The fight with the man in the hotel room. The Brugens opera scene is a nice, enjoyable scene. We even get the dad from Friday Night Dinner, Paul Ritter, God rest his soul. Also, the stuntman from Top Gear, who is Guy Haines' bodyguard, and also one of Renard's henchmen in The World's Not Enough. He recovered quickly from the submarine going down. But I just want that scene to be better, as you just can't tell what happens. It's all in silence, the camera scenes are too quick. I mean, the video game of this, Quantum of Solace, you play the opera mission. It's not quite the same format, but it would be nice if we got some more backstory of it, to be honest. I like that they bring Mathis back in Quantum of Solace, and at first he's very pissed off about what's happened after the previous film. As they found him innocent, his mistress basically says that he owes them one, so he should cooperate with Bond. I like the scene in the aeroplane where they're flying over to Bolivia when everyone's asleep and Bond's just there musing about Vespa, and he's got a necklace, drinking a Vespa as well, and Mathis comes to see if he's okay. I think this is a good character bonding scene, and it shows that Bond's still hurting, and it builds a good relationship with the two characters. Then we get to Bolivia. Strawberry Field is not very memorable, as she is very old-fashioned. However, Bond manages to turn her around, as she is very authoritative, and a bit where they try to pretend that they're on teachers on sabbatical and have won the lottery is quite funny. I suspect that will get a few laughs in the cinema if you're watching it there. It suggests that Bond has convinced her to sleep with him, basically, but we don't see it. We just see the aftermath, basically. But it's a bit like everything else in the film. You can't really see it. The stuff in Bolivia is quite slow. The party, to be honest, not a great scene. But I do like the scene with Bond and Camille in the bottom of the sinkhole, getting to know each other and why they are where they are. I think that's a good scene, like the aeroplane one. The plane action scene, it's not very good, to be honest. Hard to understand what's going on once again. I don't know why they decided to make it all like this. Felix in this film, we think he's a bad guy because he's not seen with Bond through most of it, and he's with the bad guy Dave Harbour. And yeah, just with Green and the aeroplane going over to Austria, it's not clear what sort of direction he's taken. We do see them reunite at the bar in Bolivia, around the corner from the hotel, so obviously he gives him information about where he needs to go to the hotel, so we know he's not bad in the end, but it's actually his boss that's bad. I do enjoy the eco-hotel scene with Camille having only one bullet in her gun, because Bond tells her that's all she needs to make it count. The fight with Green is not very good, however. I don't like him screaming out all the time with the axe. We can tell he's not a violent person, and just, I don't know why they have to have a fight. We could have had a fight with somebody else a bit more hands-on. I do like all the explosions in this eco-hotel scene. The pace is a lot slower, and generally it's probably the best action sequence of the film. Once Bond drops Camille off at the station, they do share a kiss, however nothing more, as they go their separate ways, which I think is fair enough, because to be honest, they're not ever romantically involved, are they? I feel the kiss was just added there because Bond needs to kiss a girl, obviously. Finally, we get to Russia. Bond's infiltrating Vespa's former lover, the Algerian. He's got another one on the go, but luckily he manages to get her away without her going down the same line as Vespa. So he intercepts the Algerian, doesn't kill him, so M's happy at the end. And that's how it should have been with the whole Vespa thing through the Craig series. Drops the love knot into the snow and walks away. Fantastic, thank you very much. On to the next one now. So, Quantum for me, it's a bit like Casino. You've got to be switched on once again to watch it. It's not an Octopussy or Tomorrow Never Dies. I know they have problems in production, and Craig wrote some of the script because MGM had financial issues. I don't think Craig should have got involved in as much as he has done, to be honest. It's kind of taken it on a sour turn. I don't know much about the director, to be honest. I don't know what he's done before. I don't know if he directs in this always in this same style. It feels like they tried to make it like a Bourne film with all its fast action that you can't really see. Craig is more comfortable in this role, as it's only a couple of years after Casino Royale and he's still grieving, but it's probably not his best performance so far. I believe that the next one, Skyfall, is the best of the Craig era because it doesn't use any of the previous two films and just takes its own turn. The soundtrack isn't great in my opinion, to be honest. Arnold, it's a damn shame that it's his last score, and I don't really like the Newman scores, to be honest. I'm still unsure about Zimmer's score, to be honest. I do own it on vinyl, but I'm still not sure, to be honest, again. That's my thoughts about Quantum of Solace, to be honest. I've probably gone on far too long once again, but I'm really enjoying giving my thoughts to the Really 007 podcast. I believe I'll be going to see Skyfall at the cinema in a couple of weeks' time, so I'm quite excited for that film as it's been 10 years since that was released. I'm done now, but if you want to follow me on Twitter, my name is at my name is Innick. Enjoy the film, everybody. Oh, one more thing. Thank you to Really 007 for putting out these wonderful podcasts so that people like you and me can have an escape, feel like normal people, and I'm not embarrassed to be talking about something we're all so passionate in, and it's a great podcast and experience. Thank you so much, Really 007.
Hi again, it's Patch. Quantum of Solace is one of the Bond films I've seen least, and for a while that was because I hadn't seen it in full until a few years ago, actually. I wasn't really drawn to it like I might be by most of the others. Does that mean it's my absolute least favourite of the series? Not at all. I just haven't ranked it very highly. Still, in recent years, it seems to have gotten a re-evaluation by some fans who appreciate many of the things it's trying to do. And to be fair, after the success of Casino Royale, making a brilliant follow-up, or direct sequel as was the case here, was no easy task. You've got quite a few threads left over from the last film to tie up, which, if done well, have the potential to make for an enjoyable revenge thriller a la License to Kill. So first and foremost, I'll talk about what I think this film does do well. In his second film in the role, Daniel Craig puts in perhaps his moodiest performance as Bond. Whilst there is humour as usual, I found on this viewing that Craig's Bond is more often than not spending a lot of time looking cool, but also coping with his inner depression and anger after the events of the last film. In some ways, it's a continuation of what Craig was doing with his performance in Casino Royale, although he was a little more cheerful there. It makes sense, I suppose. After Vesper's betrayal, Bond would naturally feel bitter, but also conflicted about his true feelings on Vesper. One of the great things is how subtly Craig plays the more emotional moments, like when he and Mathis are on the plane to Bolivia and are talking about what keeps them awake at night, and especially the final scene in Russia, where Bond finds his quantum of solace by not letting his anger towards Vesper's double agent boyfriend get to him, as well as accepting that Vesper perhaps indeed truly loved him. I find that the most fulfilling point of the film, because it's totally earned. I feel I should also praise the amount of effort that Craig puts into performing many of his own stunts. The way he leaps across balconies in the foot chase in Siena comes to mind, and despite the sequence's frantic direction, it's made all the more memorable by Craig's dedication to the action. One of my favourite action set pieces in the film is the climax of that chase scene, actually. Fighting around the scaffold whilst being suspended from wires and trying to reach for a gun is a brilliant idea, and the final shot of Bond staring straight into the camera as his gunshot kills Mitchell off-screen is a suitably triumphant Bondian moment. Two of the supporting characters leave a great impression too. I forgot to talk about him last time, but I love seeing René Mathis again. He's just a very charming and charismatic ally, and Giannini's performance is largely to thank for that. I prefer him in the last film, but his role here is not too bad, if just a bit short. I don't mind that he dies, I just think it should have happened a little later in the film. If he had just a bit more screen time, he could have been the main sacrificial lamb of the film instead of the secondary Bond girl Strawberry Fields, just to increase the emotional impact of his demise just a little more. His death scene as it is, being his corpse aside, is well played by both actors. Mathis's plea to Bond to forgive Vesper is heartbreaking, and you can tell from the subtleties in Craig's performance that Bond is genuinely struggling with the weight of the moment, but is doing his best not to let it show. Then of course, there's Olga Kurylenko as Camille. Giving Bond someone to confide in who was also out for revenge after losing loved ones was a stroke of genius. And so Camille stands out as a compelling character. She's not your typical leading lady, in that there's basically no romantic notions between her and Bond, that one kiss at the end aside. The last scene between her and Bond discussing the emptiness they feel after achieving their respective revenge quests is surprisingly deep for a Bond film, and possibly one of the most underrated scenes in the entire Craig era. Bond may have avenged both Vesper and Mathis, but that's hardly cured his heartache. Certainly No Time to Die, It's apparent that his depression from losing Vespa still lingers within him to some extent. As for the rest of the film, well, I think the best way to sum up my thoughts is that it works in pieces, but not as a whole. It's been said before, but the direction of action scenes are often very confusing and full of unnecessarily short shots. Don't get me wrong, I'm not against a fast-paced editing style. As long as enough material was shot by the director, an editor like Peter Hunt had the incredible ability to make a really fast pace in the edit work wonders. Here, I'm afraid, it makes the set pieces that may otherwise work on paper feel difficult to follow. Granted, some are better than others. The dogfight, for example, I generally got a good idea for choreography, as was the case in the short but brutal fight with Slate. Mark Forster claims these quick cuts were done to disguise the limited plot, and I honestly think it shows. What truly hampers the film for me is the script. I praised individual moments and ideas, sure. In the end, however, things feel half-baked or disjointed at points. A villain like Dominic Green and his fairly realistic scheme sound great on paper, but in realisation, I find it leaves something to be desired. Funding a coup in order to gain control of Bolivia's water supply for purposes of extortion? That sounds almost like a classic Bondian Spectre plan. Unfortunately, not enough is done with the idea for my liking to make the stakes feel ever-present. It comes across as more of an afterthought. And sadly, though Mathieu Amalric is a good actor with the right physicality to make for a creepy villain, his character unfortunately feels underdeveloped. All the right ingredients are there, but there aren't enough memorable traits to make him stand out amongst other Bond villains. Sure, during his introductory scene, we see he's found a geologist, but I kinda need a bit more than that to make him feel threatening, you know? Jesper Christensen as Mr. White makes a far better impression, however. He was already a shadowy figure in Casino Royale, but here there's such an excitingly creepy vibe about him. In that interrogation scene where he warns M that his organisation has people everywhere, his line delivery is just pitch perfect. It makes me want to see more of him, but alas, he disappears from the film after the opera scene, which, like other fans, I would call my favourite scene in the film. Anyway, the deleted alternate ending might have provided some closure to Mr. White's role, but if I'm honest, I'd much prefer if he was the main villain in this film, and not Green. He'd have been perfect as a Blofeld-esque villain without needing to bring back Spectre whatsoever. Before I sign off, I will for one last time discuss a David Arnold score, because sadly, this is so far the last one he did. Since Tomorrow Never Dies, Arnold has delivered consistently enjoyable scores that suit the post-Cold War takes on Bond, whilst bringing back the spirit of John Barry's masterful compositions. I have to admit, this is the one Arnold score I have listened to a whole lot. Like Quantum itself, I simply haven't been drawn to it often. Even so, this is well within the standards that Arnold set in his previous scores. Whenever Mark Forster's direction threatens to spoil an action scene entirely, you can always really count on David Arnold to add a suitable intensity. The reprise of Vespa's theme from Casino Royale in a few scenes heightens the emotions just as well as it did in the previous film. And boy, does Arnold really know how to capture the atmosphere of all of the locations in his tracks. Night at the Opera might be my favourite track of the score. It suits the stealthy scenes of Bond sneaking around the opera perfectly. So overall, I did enjoy myself revisiting Quantum of Solace. It may be a bit of a novelty, but it's clear to me why it does have its fans. It's a bit of an underdog with strong themes within the script, but while incomplete and disjointed, does show off how dedicated our leading man is to the role. You'd be most likely to get enjoyment out of it as a follow-up to Casino Royale, but maybe not so much as a standalone Bond film. Still, up next is Skyfall, which is easily my favourite of the Craig films. And so I look forward to bathing in plenty of jubilant positivity with that one in the next episode.
How much more pipeline do we need?
Ideally,
2,000 kilometres.
Are there any objections?
No.
Not here. No objections.
Transfer the funds from our Siberian holdings.
Done.
Where do the Americans stand?
Well, the CIA doesn't care about another dictator as long as they get their hand.
But when they find out that they've been duped?
I'm working on that.
I'm still not sure that the Tierra project is the best use of Quantum's time.
Perhaps we should shift our focus to the Canadian.
This is the world's most precious resource. We need to control as much of it as we can. Bolivia must be top priority.
Can I offer an opinion?
I really think you people should find a better place to meet. Where do you think you're going?
Hi guys, this is Liam. I've just been to see Quantum of Solace at the View Cinema in my hometown of Hartlepool. It's a movie that when I first saw it, maybe didn't quite get, I didn't appreciate, didn't quite get what they were looking to do with it, but watching it back tonight, it has grown on me over the last few years, but watching it again on the big screen tonight, you can appreciate it was a different thing to do. Looking for a direct sequel to a Bond movie hadn't been done before.
Well, Tosca isn't for everyone.
I really enjoyed it on the big screen tonight. I thought the opera scene, which I've long since held as being one of the best of the whole series, seeing it again was absolutely spectacular. I think some of the performances, Camille is a great character, Mathis, shame how it ends for him, but really, really good to see him back on screen. And I actually think the Bond and lighter scene is possibly Jeffrey Wright's best scene in the whole of his tenure as Felix. So, yep, great experience watching tonight. Thanks, guys.
Tina Sesselman and Jack Yan gave us their thoughts on the villain of Quantum of Solace, Dominic Green.
I think he's quite interesting as a Bond villain for two reasons that aren't really discussed, or at least I haven't heard them discussed. So we know that Bond villains define themselves through their headquarters or underground lairs. And Dominic Green doesn't have a headquarter or underground lair. He does his business in hotels. And hotels in movies are places of anonymity. They're kind of non-places because people come and go. And I find that very telling in regards of his overall business model. He doesn't, like a classic Bond villain, have an underground lair in a discreet location. And yet he still can't be found, really, because he uses the anonymity of open space, and he basically hides in plain sight. So I find that very interesting. The other point is that villains like to define themselves through their henchmen. Dominic Green's henchman, Elvis, is quite the head-scratcher to me because he's not physically intimidating. We see that because he trips down the stairs and his toupee falls off, so that's kind of humiliating. And we also know that he doesn't know how to use a gun, which is very weird. As a henchman, he doesn't know how to use a gun. So what are his competencies? Why was he hired? Was he hired because Dominic Green liked him or knew him? Was he giving a buddy a job? I don't know. This is very weird, actually. We never see an incompetent henchman like that, do we? I mean, aside from maybe Mr. Wind and Mr. Kid, but they still know their shit. I mean, they can kill you with a Scorpio in your mouth. Elvis doesn't seem to know anything, really, that can be of use as a henchman. So, yeah, that was just my two cents, and I may or may not have written my bachelor's thesis on Quantum of Solace, so I read some stuff about that movie. Bye for now.
Well, greetings from the colonies. I think Dominic Green's a completely underrated villain. I think he's perhaps one of the best, if not one of the top two, in the Craig years. And overall, I'd definitely have him in the top half. I think he's quite sinister in a very quiet way, very much in the mould of the Donald Pleasance quietness. There's just something unsettling about him, mainly because I think Mathieu Amalric said that he used Nicolas Sarkozy, President Sarkozy at the time, as his inspiration, because he said, well, Sarkozy flies around in his friend's private jets with Carlo Bruni in tow, believing that he's inside a James Bond film. So I think Amalric was quite correct.
Hey everybody, this is Jim James Bond. Here we are. This is it. It's Quantum of Solace. I didn't see it in the theater because it's not playing here in Denmark. So I just popped it on last night. You know, I love this film. This film is great. Last night watching it, and I've seen this film, I don't know if I've seen this the most of the Bonds, but pretty much up there. And I think the reason is it's so rewatchable. I mean, first of all, it's 90 minutes, which helps. So you can squeeze it in between an afternoon snack and dinner, right? It's really quick. So that really helps. But the pacing, oh my God, the pacing, come on, is fantastic. It just moves so quickly from A to B to C. There are no wasted scenes. There's a few problems, but I just think it's a really solid film. This is a top 10 Bond film for me. It's just mercurial. It is just like a bolt of lightning, this film. Bond is pissed, which is interesting. You like it or not, I just think that's a really good fuel for him. It really moves him forward. We're seeing more of a License to Kill, Timothy Dalton style Bond, where he doesn't care. I love the little moments. He clearly doesn't care. I mean, you just see the little bits, not even the mayhem, but just a little bit. He's on the phone with Dench, or I think it's Tanner. It's Tanner and Dench. He's on the phone with Tanner and Dench on the way to the airport in Haiti. I don't remember exactly how they wrap it up. He's like, you know, yes, ma'am, and then just tosses the phone, like, in the backseat, just nonchalantly. Like, he's just had it. His emotions are just clearly taking over in this movie. You can see it. You can feel it. It's visceral. More so than any of the other Daniel Craig Bonds. And like I said, more so probably than we've seen since License to Kill. There's some anger, I think, in The World Is Not Enough. And I know I mentioned that. I mentioned The World Is Not Enough last time. I just love that film. Another top 10 film. Starting kind of from the beginning, let's talk about the characters. So Bond, I kind of touched on Bond in this film. Like, who is Bond in Quantum of Solace? He's a man on a mission. Although, if you notice, he still follows some protocol. Now, he pisses off M, you know, constantly in this movie. Like, she's pissed at him. Kind of in the way she's pissed at him for Die Another Day, really. Similar in that sense. We've got a similar M to Die Another Day, I think. So he does sort of follow the rules a bit, but for the most part, we're seeing a very renegade Bond. M, like I said, is fantastic. The villain, a lot of people don't like Dominic Green. I personally think that Matthew Amalric here is great. I think he's a really good villain, and the reason I think is because he's not intimidating because of this, his maniacal, you know, ways and his outrageous plan. He's just sort of like so determined, you know? And this is exemplified wonderfully in the axe fight in the hotel at the end. Like that, he's just a mongoose, right? He's a cornered rat with an axe, and Bond has trouble like containing all that rage from Dominic Green that you can see under the surface. You can see under the surface from the moment we meet him, where he's got the stamps and he's stamping. Very narcissistic guy. And he's just, I don't know, I think he's really good. Elvis, Anatoly Taubman. Now, he gets a lot of stick for being kind of a weak henchman, but I don't look at Elvis as being a henchman. I just sort of see him as being kind of like an assistant, right? He's like the administrative assistant to Dominic Green. I mean, you can see he, instead of him being a physical threat, you know, he gets pushed around by Green's other guys, right? So he's just more of kind of like this kind of comic relief in a way, but he's just sort of like a soft assistant. Camille, I think, is fantastic. And the reason I do is because she's got her own plot. She has her own plot. Now, we don't see that too often in Bond girls. I mean, you do like, you know, Octopussy, yeah. But so I really like this. I like that she has her own motivations. Like, oh, really good motivations, and that's great. I'll get into some of the other characters as we go along. Mathis, I love Mathis. He's one of my favorite characters. He's a great ally, akin to Ali in From Russia With Love. He's like that kind of, you know, he travels with Bond. And here we see this really interesting relationship between the two of them, this sort of relationship of necessity, and then their relationship, there's a little arc to it. I think that's really cool. Those are the main ones. I mean, Mr. White, I could go on for days about Jesper Christensen. I think he is, oh my, I think he's one of the most fascinating characters in the Craig movies. Underused, so underused. I wish they'd continued with, you know, the Quantum as the shadowy villain. Forget Spectre. Let's make Quantum, you know, Because we all thought that, right? I mean, we all thought that Quantum was going to be the specter of the 21st century, and it was really great. And Mr. White was so cool. I mean, his performance in the little interrogation scene in Italy is, like, wonderful. And then his appearance in Spectre is, like, the highlight of Spectre. Like, the scene that he's in, he steals the freaking movie. He's so good in that. So I wish we could have seen more of Mr. White. I think he's a fascinating villain. He's a much better villain than Blofeld. So getting back to the beginning, fantastic car chase. I don't mind the editing. It doesn't bother me at all. I can see what's going on and I can follow the action. I think what this film does, it gets dinged a lot for the editing. Now, there's not a lot of scenes that really rely too much on quick editing. Now, this is one of them. But the thing is, it's right at the beginning. So in a way, it teaches you how to watch the film. It's saying, like, this is how this film is going to be. This is a new style, and right out of the gate, there's the vocabulary, there's the editing vocabulary, all ready to go. And it's an amazing pre-title sequence. Probably one of the shortest, I think, if memory serves. Okay, so on to the theme song. Now, unpopular opinion, I love it. I really do. I will go to my grave defending Another Way to Die. I think it's great. It comes out of the gate, bam, 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 you know, the drums and that gnarly distorted guitar. I even love the visuals. I think they perfectly, wonderfully reflect the tone of the film, right? I think it prepares you. It just totally prepares you for what's to come. And then, yeah, we go into that interrogation scene, and there's the thing with Mitchell shooting the other bodyguard. I heard people say, oh, well, why doesn't he shoot Bond? Well, I mean, it's quite obvious, right? The other bodyguard has a gun at the ready. So, of course, you're going to take out the threat. I mean, that's bodyguard 101, I think, isn't it? I don't know. I'm not in that line of work. But it seems to me you would take out the first threat. Because if he just went and shot Bond, he'd immediately just get taken out, right? So one of my complaints, the chase is cool. It is one of my complaints about the film is the cross-cutting with the horse race or whatever they're doing out there in Siena. Although I think maybe the reason they have that is because eventually the chase enters that space. And so they're sort of setting it up. Although I think they did maybe got a little out of control there with showing that. Now, that being said, there's some really cool stuff. There's a civilian that gets shot, which is really jarring. The woman in the crowd. And then there's the cool little fight on the scaffolding. Great, great stuff. We almost get a Casino Royale style gun barrel in a way with that shot. Not really. Now we get into, they're hunting down, you know, who's Mitchell. They follow the money. It leads them to Haiti. Great fight sequence, obviously. Fantastic fight sequence. Was it influenced by Bourne? Yeah, probably. I don't know. A lot of things were at the time. It's fine. I mean, you can't complain about films being influenced by films. I mean, that's the history of cinema. We wouldn't have cinema if it wasn't for influence, right? So it doesn't bother me. I think it's a really great fight. I just love Wow, we see this just ruthlessness with Bond here at the end where he raises the extremities to force blood to the wound. I mean, that's rough, right? I mean, that's insanely violent. So then, you know, we meet Camille, we meet Dominic Green. There's this interesting little exchange. Love the moment with the motorcycle. I think it's really cool. The boat chase is great. Again, people complain about the editing there. Doesn't bother me. I think people overestimate or overvalue geography in a fight. That word comes up a lot. Like, I can't follow the geography, so the fight isn't good. I don't think you necessarily need to. I think if you follow the action, you just follow the moments. There's a lot of great movies that are lousy when it comes to geography. Now, maybe Bad Boys is not everyone's favorite film. However, watch that film. The action sequences, there's no geography. You have no idea where anybody is. But it's so much fun. It doesn't matter. This is also where we're introduced to the secondary villain. Very interesting. General Medrano. I mean, fairly stock villain guy. Fairly stock mustache twirler. But that's okay. Because I like it. Because I like Camille's backstory. So, you know, then we go off to Austria. There's this great sequence in Austria with the opera. I think this is fantastic. I mean, I've heard some things about Tosca's relevance to the film, like the connection between the story of Tosca and this. I don't recall it off the top of my head. But the set, like that set with the amazing eye, with the eye, it's sort of like the symbolic, it's like the eye of Quantum. But at the same time, another thing that's really, really cool that I don't hear too much mentioned about this sequence is how this is how they meet. They meet in a public place, but they communicate via headsets. Right? They're separated so as not to arouse suspicion. They're hiding in plain sight. It's not like that silly old, you know, building with the long table in the middle of it, Inspector. Now, you could argue, well, that's a bit more Bond, but Quantum does it a bit more. It's more clever. It's more spycraft, you know. It's really cool. So I think that's fine. Fine. There's wonderful moments of sound dropping out during the chase. A lot of editing there that my theory is that it was a lot of the fast editing during that gunfight is to just hide the violence. I mean, it's a really violent gunfight. Bond is just murdering dudes. It's incredible. And then we get the little homage to The Spy Who Loved Me, the Where's Fekish? I think he even says something similar to Where's Fekish. Something, he says something that Where's Green? I don't know. Who are you working for? I don't remember. But it's very similar to the Thai moment in The Spy Who Loved Me, and then he drops him on the car. And then Judi Dench is pissed again. I love this sequence with Judi Dench taking off her makeup as she's just irritated and yelling at everybody. It's just such a humanizing moment. Like, it's just so, this is like the human side. I mean, this is a woman, right? I mean, this is her bedtime regimen, is, you know, taking off the makeup. But she doesn't stop working because she's, you know, she's a motivated person. So of course she's just going to keep working through that regimen. So I think that's really cool. I really like that a lot. From Austria, we go to Bolivia. Well, first we get Mathis, the little Mathis scene where he's able to recruit Mathis. Maybe a little bit too easily he's able to recruit him, but he does, and it's great. It's a beautiful scene. Lovely to look at. Costume design is fantastic for both of them. And then on the plane, we see the alcoholic in Bond, which is, I like that they address that, because clearly he is an alcoholic, right? I mean, he drinks a lot. There's even a little reference to it in Die Another Day where they're scanning him and they're like, there's liver trauma. Clearly it's Bond. Something, I don't remember the exact quote. So we actually get to see him here just strung out, right? It's great. Well, it's not great. It's very sad. It's very, very sad. And then we get a little, obviously, the connection to Vesper there with the theme, with the drink. He's drinking the Vesper drink. And then we get to Bolivia. There's hilarious stuff with the hotels. I love the moment at the party, you know, where with Elvis, where his toupee gets knocked off. I think that's really funny. Again, he's the butt of every joke. And as the audience, we mock Elvis. People who don't like this film tend to mock Elvis as being a lousy henchman. But that's the point. You're just supposed to mock him. He's silly. He's a silly man. You know, then there's this brutal scene with Mathis. You know, it's heart-wrenching seeing him die. Yeah, he disposes of him in a dumpster. I don't think he does that. It's not Bond doing it. I think he's just trying to stage a crime. That's the way I read it, is he's just trying to, I could be wrong, but I think he's just trying to stage something, like he's trying to make it look a certain way. I don't think he really thinks of Mathis as trash. I think he has a lot of respect for Mathis. And he's come back to sort of, they've forgiven each other. There's even a line about it. And they've forgiven each other at that point. And so Bolivia continues. You know, we have the sequence with Strawberry Fields, which of course is a classic Bond name. Classic Bond girl name, love it. She's lovely. She's the sacrificial lamb, as there has to be one.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com. If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
And again, now maybe M is a bit too much in the field, as she is, though, in the Craig movies, so that could be one complaint. But this great work here by Judi Dench. She just lays into him about the body count that he creates. He manages to escape, and then you get that little nice moment with the two of them where she basically says, you know, go, and then Tanner, follow him, because I trust him, right? Then we get the plane situation, which is sort of cool. I think we need it. It's not one of my favorite moments. I think it's kind of neat. It seems like it's not CGI. It seems like those are actual planes, which is cool. It's not the most exciting thing, but it does get us to the MacGuffin, right, which is the water supply. That's kind of so that's important that we get there. We go through that. We get a bit more exposition about Camille, and then from there we have this wonderful moment with Felix. I like the fact that, in a way, the CIA is another villain. Like, they're the bad guys also. I mean, that's kind of interesting. So you have all these different villains. And then they're trying to kill Bond. That's sort of cool. And then we see this interesting relationship between good CIA and bad CIA. And I think that's kind of important for Felix Leiter as a character. I mean, that's kind of what you imagine Felix Leiter to be. He's like kind of a little bit of an outsider in the CIA. And then we head off to this crazy, highly flammable hotel. You know, and you can have problems with where they put the fuel cells. They put them right in the driveway. Where anybody, you know, doesn't set the parking brake is going to be trouble, right? But it's a really striking set. It's a really cool set. And it leads to this amazing sequence, a wonderful sequence with fire and Dominic Green just going wild. It's like a wild animal with the axe. And the moment where the axe enters his foot is just, oh, so violent. It's such a visceral moment. Like, man, you feel the axe in a foot. Like, you can really feel that. And so I really like this sequence. It's a great editing, great action, just a wonderful fight sequence. And then, of course, in the other room we've got Camille, but we have this moment, you know, the room is burning. There doesn't seem to be a way out. Now, the thing I like about this, and it's sort of, I have this theory, it's like this elemental theory, and this is probably silly, this is super silly, but my theory is that he loses Vesper to water. In this film, he saves Camille from fire. And I think that's sort of cool in and of itself. And then on top of that, he's about to take his own life here. He's willing to shoot them both, shoot her and himself. But then he finds, obviously he finds a way out because Bond survives. I'm speaking to you, No Time to Die. So he survives. So then the Vesper story gets wrapped up. There's the, you know, the little line at the end, I never left. And then that's where we end. I think it's really good. I think it's a really great film because, like I said, it's highly rewatchable. It's fantastic. It just moves so quickly. Even for 90 minutes, it feels shorter than 90 minutes. So that's it. That's my take. Thank you so much, Really 007 Podcast, for hopefully including this once again. Cheers.
You can't sleep.
May I fix your drink, sir?
What are you drinking? I don't know. What am I drinking?
3 measures of Gordon's gin, 1 of vodka, 1/2 a measure of Quinolele, which is not vermouth. Shaken well until it is ice cold, then served with a large, thin slice of lemon peel. 6 of them.
That's impressive. They're good. You should have one. No, it'll just keep me awake. So what's keeping you awake?
I was wondering why you came with me.
It takes something to admit you were wrong. You want a sleeping pill?
No.
Pain pill? No. I have pills for everything. Some make you taller. Some make you forget. I'm going to try and get some sleep.
Good idea.
Hey. Hey Bond fans, how's it going? This is the Northerner who loved me. I just got a another comment here this week for Quantum of Solace, which I went tonight to watch at the Odeon in Manchester Sunday night. And I've been looking forward to this one. I do have a soft spot for all of Dan's films in a way. So I've been looking forward to this one. So I've made some notes when I came back, just giving me a bit of a guide to some of my comments that will be coming up. And I do love the PTS in Lake Garda, just the way it starts after the end of the last film, obviously, with a car chase. And he's got Mr. White in the back, of course, and he's been chased on Lake Garda. I actually went to Lake Garda a couple of years after this. I've been there twice, I think. Over the years, the girl that worked for the holiday company on the way was telling us that they actually filmed this on Lake Garda, so you can, which I didn't know. I had no idea, and it was only maybe even a year after the film was out, so you can imagine my delight when I heard about that. So it's good to see some of those tunnels on the way. As soon as she said that, I started looking at some of the tunnels, and we went to Limoni and Mount Chesney in the subsequent days. We had a look at some of the places on the way where they used the car chase, so that was nice. And so obviously after that, he moves to the song. I'm not that big a fan of the song, to be honest. I do like Alicia Keys, I do like Jack White, but I always feel it like it sounds like a bit of a jam session, this song. It could have been better. It's just that it sounds a bit unfinished, you know, in a way, a bit like some bits of the film that people say. There's good bits of the film, you know, the main section as it builds up is good, but then you've got that weird bit in the middle where they just sound like they're just pissing about, you know, just singing all kinds of stuff. It's good to see Mr. White, just going back to where they dropped off Mr. White after the song, and he got M there and stuff, and they're talking to him. I do like Jess Whee's a good actor, and it's good to see him again in this film, and he obviously expands on what Quantum's got to do with stuff from the film before. And there is a little bit where he overacts, I think, a little bit, you know, when he does the "you don't even know we exist" kind of thing. I just think, yeah, you've just overacted a little bit there, mate. You know, it's a little bit, don't know, feels a bit naff. But it's not a little bit, it's a bit. But I love the fact of he adds the tension of the fact that they've got all these moles and people on the inside in such an early part of the film. That's obviously a good plot device. So, yeah, that's done well. Yeah, the plot is good. I think it's obviously not a world domination plot, but we've had loads of those over the years. And obviously, Dominic's a wealthy businessman. I always think he's a bit like Maximilian Largo in Never Say Never Again, in a way. It just makes me think of him, to be honest. He's got that kind of vibe about him. And yeah, he's good. I mean, obviously, Elvis. I don't know what the deal is with Elvis. He's a bit like Vargas, isn't he? Thunderball, I always think. And there's definitely some sort of coding going on with that guy, I think, as well. I know David has mentioned that. The Bond girls, yeah. So onto the Bond girls. We've got Fields. I do like Gemma Arterton. She's nice, and it's nice to see her in this. I can't be the only straight guy that thinks that she's got something on, not much on under that coat, you know. She's kind of got that coat and on those boots, and just think, yeah, she's just got like the sexy underwear under that coat, who knows. But I can't be the only guy that thinks that. Obviously, moving on to the main Bond girl in this, Camille. Olga's been in a lot of stuff over the years, and she's obviously, you know, nice looking, and I think she's good. That obviously going for the Anya vibe, you know, Anya, Dr. Goodhead kind of vibe, you know, the another agent working almost alongside Bond, so that stuff always works well, so why not use that again. And it's good in this as well. She's superb. I love the bit towards the end when she's wants to kill the guy that, you know, killed her family. So it's a bit like Bond. She's got a Scottish title, so that's good. You know, I think this is one of the most stylish modern Bond films. You can tell they're sort of trying hard to be trendy and kind of make it zip by and kind of be cool and edgy and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it looks good. It looks amazing, and it was good to see it in the cinema again. I think it's the third time I've seen it. I saw it twice when it first came out, and I've just seen it obviously this time after all these years. Still like the hotel bit at the end. It's obviously quite an offbeat ending. It's good, you know. I love the bit in the desert with Dominic when he's kind of chasing him down, and it says that the, you know, his own people are going to, you know, go after him and hunt him down, which they obviously do, because, you know, Judy mentions that. I do love, like, in Casino, there's lots of exposition from M in this film. She does that so well, and they must have thought that, you know, Purvis and Wade, I think, did this one as well. They must have thought that stuff worked well in Casino, where Judy kind of explains the plot, and it never sounds forced and all that kind of stuff. It just gives the audience a heads up with these things, but it's never forced or over the top, you know. It just lets you follow it a bit more as you go along. I do love the Vespa closure thing at the end. Obviously, I love the previous film. As I've said, it's my top Bond film now, is Casino. And it's love to see, I love to see more stuff in this connected to that film. It's nice because you feel like it's an expanded album of Casino, if that makes sense. I'd say the score, you know, out of 10, I'd give it, you know, 7 out of 10, 3 out of 5, whatever you want to, however you want to do it. And I just wish I'd actually like to put it higher in my personally chosen Bond chart, you know, not a sort of Bond chart, one that I'd shoes myself, which has changed a bit this year, my chart, but it's still kind of in the place it was, I think, at the start of the year, before they started having these things in the flicks in the UK. But it's about 18th, something like that. So I would love to have it higher. I mean, even below it, there's stuff like Golden Gun and You Only Live Twice and then Diamonds, which I love those films as well. But I think it's to this film's credit that I've actually placed it above now, above those films in this chart that I've got. It's a good film. It's such a solid Bond film. And I think with a bit more care, it could have been an absolute classic, an absolute barnstormer, this one. But it's good, and I'm looking forward to Skyfall next time as well. So, yeah, thank you for listening, and check out what these guys do on this podcast. It's a wonderful podcast with some good people adding to it as well. And they're all lovely guys that do this podcast. So check them out and add them on your Spotify or Apple Music. Yeah, see you next time for Skyfall. I just want to mention about the editing just before I go. A lot of people beat this with that stick about the editing. And I must admit, on the cinema screen, it is so over the top. It's just, I don't know how any human can actually follow the scenes when they're so fast and kinetic. It's like Peter Hunt on speed. You know, Peter Hunt was good at that fast choppy thing, but I think Mark Foster just, that's not to his credit that he overdoes that way too much. I mean, I think that guy's not ever seen a David Lean film in his life. I just think he's obviously talented at what he does, but the editing is just, it is over the top. It's just way too fast. After about the third major action scene, it just starts to just get to you a little bit. You know, just think, God's sake, just slow it down a little bit, mate. I did think the sound is fantastic on this film. I know it's particularly when he's having the fight with that guy in the little hotel. It just sounds like you're there with him. You know, it's just like so blank and kind of like you just hear the sounds and the punching and the smashing of glass and all that kind of stuff. So whoever did the sound for this film, the sound design, well done, because I think that's certainly beats the editing stuff. But good film, and I'm glad they made it. You know, it's obviously, it was affected by the stuff going on at the time with the scripts and all that kind of thing, but it's good, and I'm glad they made it, as I say. But yeah, thank you for listening, and see you next time. Bye bye.
Hello, Darren Bithell again with my take on a film whose title is questioned among many as to what it really means. I myself don't have a problem with the title. As far as I'm concerned, it's a play on words. Bond is looking for peace or resolution, given the circumstances he's been placed in after Casino. And there's the reference to the Quantum organisation within the film also. If only everything else within Quantum of Solace was as straightforward as that. We all know what went wrong during the pre-production and production of this film, which wasn't helped by studio-enforced deadlines. The response of Casino, both commercially and artistically, was such that it raised the bar for the next film higher than possibly any Bond film before. In some respects, perhaps the success of Casino created what I believe the Craig films may have suffered with afterwards. For me, there seems to be a great consciousness in the Craig films to be critically accepted, and as a result, Eon brought in award-winning auteurs to helm the films, which may have alienated some of the fans in losing the fun and frolics of previous Bond tenures, something that Mission Impossible seemed to have filled the market for. This film is truly a difficult second album. When I heard You Know My Name before Casino's release, I knew we were on a winner. When I heard Another Way to Die before Quantum's release, I was totally deflated. It is the worst James Bond theme of the series. It just sounds like a bunch of primary school kids all singing na 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 all the way through. All the elements on paper promised a great film. The same script writers, David Arnold, Mark Forster as a director, whose films I genuinely like, a great cast, especially Matthew Almerich, who is superb in The Diving Bell and The Butterfly. The theme is a blip. Without seeing any critical response beforehand, I went in the first night confident, and as time went by, I came to the conclusion it was a blip, but not without some merits. There are lessons to be learned after Quantum, the main one being you cannot make a Bond film every 2 years anymore, even with a fixed set of creators who know the Bond process inside out. Whether the idea to make the Daniel Craig Bond films a story arc was there from the very beginning remains to be seen. But to state that this film is a direct sequel to Casino didn't help, because you've instantly raised the bar further on a film that really suffers from a lack of ingredients to be the main feast it aspired to be. Finally, it's okay to catch up with your franchise rivals if you don't try to be like your rivals. With Casino, it brought Bond back as far as grit and peril are concerned, with action sequences and scenes that hurt, a la Jason Bourne. Quantum, the style of the film, is trying to be like Bourne, assisted by the same second unit director who helmed those films. I've nothing against the Jason Bourne films. Overall, they're great, but Bond is Bond. Daniel Craig literally throws himself into this, which he said in the documentary Being James Bond. He felt as though he had to, given the lack of script. Whenever there is a script to deliver, he provides an even grittier performance than in Casino, in which you truly believe he's bordering on the psychotic. Several scenes really stand out here. The disposal of Mr. Slate and Mathis, a real Fleming for me. The end scene in which he comes face to face with Vesper's other half is one of his standout moments as Bond. With the lack of script, the cast of this film is a total embarrassment of riches. Giancarlo Giannini is totally underserved given the relationship that was built, then questioned, then built again between Bond and Mathis. The death of Mathis is effective, however, and is the only emotional spot in this film. Jeffrey Wright just comes and goes, carrying whatever weight is left within a very convoluted and slender plot. I had high hopes for Matthew Almerich, and what he had in this film, he performed very well. His scenes with General Medrano are great, and his final showdown with Bond in the Blazing Inferno is superb, especially his utterance of the line, "Looks like you've just lost another one." Talking of the other one, Olga Kurylenko is one of my favourite Bond women. Like Bond, she's out for revenge with a background which leaves me totally willing and indeed afraid for her when she meets Medrano. Everyone else comes and goes, but special mention must go to Elvis, who is probably, along with Mr. Kill, one of the most useless and pointless henchmen in the series, and the green employee who aimlessly sweeps air for a living. Unlike many a Bond fan, I assume here, the lack of gun barrel doesn't really bother me during the Craig era. Even when there is a gun barrel, Craig never did it properly. You can always see the Walther before he turns and fires, unlike in Casino, but then he didn't walk in that one. The pre-title sequence is absolutely brilliant. It feels as though you're in a simulator during that chase at times. Imagine seeing that in 4DX these days. Since its release, it's even more special for me as I journeyed down that same stretch of road during a holiday around Lake Garda 6 years ago. Every morning I woke to a balcony view that you see at the beginning of the film, with those tunnels directly opposite me, and you were guaranteed that David Arnold's score would go round my head. Like The Living Daylights, we weren't aware that this was to be the swan song of David Arnold. Like Denial Another Day, his score is one of the saving graces of the film. We all hope one day he will return. As said before, the song and indeed the titles are the worst of the series for me. Then the film just goes in a breakneck speed to try and cover the holes throughout the film. More holes than in Blackburn, Lancashire. At times you're thrilled and spilled, but when it ends, you're left thinking what on earth happened there. The thing that forgives Quantum is that I can see the potential within this film. There is a heart in here, and if the time was given for the script and story to develop, given a different second unit team to work on the action sequences other than the Jason Bourne team, and Mark Forster given more time and control to put his stamp on it all, Quantum of Solace would have been a great Bond film. Whatever Forster tries to put in this film, such as incorporating the Siena horse race into the Bond-Mitchell chase and the use of Tosca, it ends up confusing this Bond film even more. This film is fighting against itself. The main thing I do take out of this film is, despite it being a mess, I cared about it, more so than some other fully rounded Bond films in the series. What I don't like, looking back on this, is the way this film is forgotten in the Craig Bond arc, as shown in Spectre. When Bond walks through the old target range in the old MI6 building before meeting Blofeld, you see no reference to Quantum of Tall. No Dominic Green, no Mr. White, no Camille, etc. You can't be selective like that if all the Craig Bond films were under one umbrella from the beginning. However, the attitude that is shown amongst Craig, Wilson and Broccoli of this film in the aforementioned documentary tells a tale. Quantum of Solace shouldn't be a Bond film to mutter under your breath, yet it was a disappointment, not an embarrassment. So last night I attended a screening that was about a third of the attendance for Casino, yet the 23 that were there were all familiar faces. There were no trailers, only ads, before Quantum started, leaving 5 or 6 turn up to the point where Bond dismissed Mitchell. Like every film, seeing it in the cinema is really the only way to fully appreciate its achievements and its faults. And the faults of this film are editors with too many uneven scissors, and a director that is totally and utterly lost. But without a script, you can only sympathise. I still think the pre-titles and several sections of this film, especially the last 10 to 15 minutes, really hold up well. Everything else is like trying to eat a main course on a roller coaster. How much you can be able to eat, you can't really absorb. I think in a funny way, the cameo appearance of Michael G. Wilson, Sir Lord Master of All He Surveys, sums up the film itself. He sits there with his paper looking up when he needs to, with a kind of resigned, too laid-back nature, which to me is interpreted as saying, "Yes, we know, but let's polish this turd as best we can." It's a mess, but it's not a boring mess. 4 years passed after Quantum, and not only did the 50th anniversary of the franchise arrive, but also the Diamond Jubilee of Queen Elizabeth II. It was, of course, during the opening ceremony of the London Olympics that year that she and Bond shared a skydive. I'm sure she would have preferred a marmalade sandwich. Next week will be a rather fitting showing of Skyfall. Rest in peace.
This is a tale of the supernatural.
The Tapes, a podcast of the uncanny.
Do you believe in ghosts?
Join me, host Christopher Goldie, and guests as we discuss the best in unsettling television and film.
Who is this? Who is coming?
Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Search for at The Tapes Pod, part of the Pod Dojo Network.
Hello, this is Noel here from Dublin in Ireland, and it's time to get out. I saw Quantum of Solace there on Saturday night. Quantum of Solace comes from that time in cinema where there was this real stripped down approach to certainly fantasy movie making. I do look at things like Children of Men and 28 Weeks Later, and I think Quantum is a nice reflection of that, that the filmmakers tried to make a kind of a lean and fast movie, and instead of that it comes across maybe a bit rushed and thin. It's almost a little bit afraid to be elaborate. I personally like the film. I get the criticisms, but it is very consistent in its intent, what it's trying to do. I do find the first 20-25 minutes quite exciting. I love the stuff in the tunnel and that head-on collision that one of the cars has with the truck. Now, in saying all that, actually, I missed the pre-title sequence, but it didn't really spoil my enjoyment. Actually, I sat down and just had this big grin on my face watching the title track, and then straight into the interrogation sequence and the chase. I just was completely wrapped up in it, I have to say that. And that spectacular fall through the glass roof. I don't know, it's a great sequence. And it, one of the things that comes out of Quantum really well is Daniel Craig and what a great physical action actor he is. And you're really there with him. Craig has this particular facial expression he adopts, particularly in the driving sequence in the pre-title. The thing where he kind of purses his lips together. So nonchalant and like he just doesn't give a you know what. I always crack up when they're in Mitchell's apartment. I don't think he smoked. And also I love the just a tiny little moment where when he's in the car being driven to the apartment, he just seems to just look over and stare at the driver just for no apparent reason. And then we come to that great sequence in at the opera. One of my absolute favourite shots and compositions in a Bond movie. Bond is after leaving the stage and he comes back into the main building and there's Green and his heavies coming down the stairs and they just stop, stare at each other, and just it's a faraway shot and you see Craig standing there and just the colours of the wall and the floor and him in the tuxedo, just a beautiful shot. It always reminds me, it's very Stanley Kubrick in composition. Then there's the airplane sequence as well. I have to contain myself watching it in the cinema where he screams at the controls, "Come on!" It's shades of Roger Moore from the end of Octopussy, actually. And I've always liked his relationship with Camille. And I love the scene in the cave. I like caves in cinema because they can be really atmospheric, a lot of silence, and a lovely bit of music by David Arnold as well. And it is his best soundtrack. I always remember watching it the first time in the cinema back in 2008. And that scene where we go to the desert and the camera tilts down to the iguana or a lizard. I always remember watching that and just my heart sinking and thinking, my God, this is the end of the picture. That's a slight problem with Quantum in that it doesn't really have a middle to it. I think one of the reasons why I like Quantum is because it's quite quick and fast and doesn't slow down enough to become tedious. Unfortunately, I think for Craig, it's not a great vehicle for him in that it asks of him to play this very revenge-fueled Bond. And I'm always, you know, reminded of License to Kill, which is Dalton's second movie, and again it's a revenge film. Didn't allow him to nurture that more charisma or warmth, and Craig suffers that a little bit. I saw Quantum of Solace definitely about 6 times when it came out. I went to see it probably more times than any other Daniel Craig movie. There you go. And because I missed the pre-title, I'll definitely go and see it again in about 2 weeks. It's on a Wednesday night over here, so, and I might just go and watch the pre-title and then come home, but no, I wouldn't. I'd be there for that, the long haul, and especially the end crawl. Love that music.
So it's the day after the night before when I saw Quantum of Solace at the cinema once again, mostly made up of people in their 20s, I presume. I think a smaller audience this time, but not by much. The film was okay. I didn't have an awful time. I actually did have a good time at certain moments, which is a shock because my viewing last year was really not good. I think I was just like, oh, it's just not going to be good. It does have good moments, and I can't deny that if I try and think about them. Outside of what I mentioned in my first recording about the first few minutes, I think the Tosca scene is good. You know, the whole idea for an evil organization to have a meeting in public in such a place which is full of people, yet to be so secret, I think it is clever. The environment is very pretty, and I think it works for a spy film. I think that's a really clever idea. So I understand why people go to it. I don't think it's like a masterpiece of cinema, like nowhere near, but I think it's an interesting idea, and I think they pulled it off quite well. The actual boat chase is interesting. We don't get too many boat chases in modern Bond. You know, the last time we will have had one by this point would have been The World Is Not Enough, and then before that, I'm going to presume Moonraker. I could be wrong. For like a high-speed boat sequence, I mean. So that's always fun to watch. I think what I enjoyed when I saw the film for the first time was the different types of chase sequences. So we have by car, by boat, by plane. So I like the variation of vehicles in this. The plane sequence, I just mentioned that. I do enjoy that as well. I probably prefer Mathis in this film than I do to Casino, but even then, I still don't think he gets enough time to really make a massive impact. I'm not highly emotional over him dying. However, I have to say, now seeing this after No Time to Die, it makes Bond visiting Vesper's grave in No Time to Die feel a bit more like a full circle moment. You know, Mathis is telling Bond to forgive her and forgive yourself and all of that stuff, and it feels like he came a long way, but he got there in the end. So that made Mathis's death scene a bit more poignant for me, although the fact that he's put into that boot so quickly, I just don't understand. But Fields, Gemma Arterton, I think she's very good, does not have enough in this film, and you know, she really is just there to be the sacrificial lamb. There's a lot of sacrificial lambs in Daniel Craig Bond films, but M puts it rather well. You know, she worked in an office, you know, it wasn't like her proper thing, and yet she's been caught in the crossfire. So I always think it's a shame. I also think it's a shame that we just don't like, you know, for you're going to do an homage to Goldfinger, but with oil. We want to see it, and it really annoys me that you don't get a full look at Fields like that. You just, it's crossfades and an extreme close-up, and it's just a bit like, okay, why go to that effort? I can imagine that took a lot of time to prep, and yet there's no, you can't see it. And I think that's one of my issues with the editing, is that there's so many quick cuts and just transitions, and some of them work really well, like Bond and Camille walking through the desert and the crossfades. I think that's actually really beautiful, but I think there's too much on trying to have like a weird aesthetic here, which for me doesn't work in a Bond film. Like the quick cuts, as much as I love the car chase in the beginning, I think there's better car chases in the Bond films, because there's so many cuts. There's like 10 cuts in 2 seconds, 2-3 seconds. It's like you can't really get a clear shot of things, and I think it messes with the environment for me. You can't, sometimes it's like you want to see a character get from A to B, and with some of the cuts that I made, you can't really see it, and it makes you not understand the environment as well. Whereas in other films, when you just take a bit more time and you can actually just see the movement, you can see how people get to where they are. So yeah, I did say about the music, I think David Arnold did do a good job. I think there's just not a lot of stuff that stands out or is very memorable. This is probably my least favourite of his scores. I don't think it's a bad score, but I think his others are just much better. I think Casino Royale is a really good score. That here is just something's lost, although, you know, the no good about goodbye elements in the score are always really nice to hear. There's like one, I'm sure there's like one or two, you know, elements of Another Way to Die that you can kind of hear in it, which is nice as well, but it's not prominent at all. Olga Kurylenko, she actually does a a decent job. She's I think she's actually a really good element. I kind of wish she did a bit more. She's kind of similar. Her character Camille is similar for me to Melina Havelock. I feel more on board with Camille, and I kind of believe her struggle and believe her so much wanting revenge. You can really see it and feel it. She's gonna get it. However, you know, she's not purely driven by violence. She will do other things to get to what she needs. But I just kind of like, I love that she's able to actually go through with it, you know, walk off and go, right, okay. I like that she has kind of like a backstory that feels complete. She had an awful moment in her childhood. She is part of a secret service and then goes on a revenge mission. It's very much mirroring, you know, Bond. You know, it feels like a License to Kill thing as well. So it's nice that she's, you know, got that, and there's more to her, and it's not about her, you know, relationship with Bond. It's about, you know, her motivations and then how her and Bond can collaborate to kind of both get what they need out of it. So I do like that she exits the film without being a complete romantic interest. I think there's probably attraction there, but it's absolutely not the right time to actually see it and, you know, do something about it. Bond himself, Daniel Craig, he is really good in this film. I don't think he does a bad performance at all. He does what he can with the script and the story that he has. I think he fits in well. I love when he does get his moments of humour. I absolutely hate the stationary line. I just think it's so weird. And I'm just like, oh God, it was... I did roll my eyes in the cinema, I think. But apparently it worked on Fields, so, I mean, good for both of them. Good for both of them. But yeah, no, I like where he ends up in the film. I like, you know, as much as I don't love this story, I like that, you know, his arc feels complete. You know, by the end of it, it feels like, okay, this is done. Dominic Green is a villain that I'm... He does a good enough job because I don't like him. I root against him, but there's not a lot of charm there. There's not a lot of, you know, I like a villain where I know I don't like them, yet there's other elements to them where I'm like, oh, do you know what? Fair enough, fair play. Dominic Green's just so slimy. For me, I used to think of him as like second rate Le Chiffre. Like, I was just like, oh, he's trying to be Le Chiffre and he's never going to be. And I know that wasn't the aim at all, but I just don't love the character and I don't find him particularly entertaining. It doesn't help that, you know, there's Mr. White there who is very intriguing, and we've already had that in Casino Royale, and yet we don't get too much more of him here, and that's really frustrating. You get those hints of Guy Haines, which we don't get. And then we get Elvis, who's just a wasted kind of henchman. I don't know. I feel like he is there just for laughs, but if there are any laughs, I didn't have them. I'm just a bit like, oh, well, that's a bit awkward and weird. You know, I feel a lot of it. Sorry for him, actually. He just seems to be in the complete wrong situation for him. But, you know, there we go. Yeah, I think that covers, like, most things I would want to say about the film anyway. They gave it a shot. For me, it's just not for me. I would still watch it again anyway. Not anytime soon, probably. I'm glad it has its fans, and I can see where some things were going, how things could have been developed to make it better. But yeah, it's not my favourite. But we are moving on to Skyfall next time. Skyfall is a good film. I enjoy it. Went down in my rankings the last time I watched it, but I think it has way more positives and negatives in my eyes. And yeah, I'm sure a lot of people will enjoy that way more than Quantum. Oh, I would presume anyway. I don't know what the general consensus will be. I know it's going to be good.
Woo! So I've just got home after watching Quantum of Solace on the big screen. I still love it. Sorry to have to tell some of the haters. It's a quick, breathless joyride of a chase movie, really. And it never lets up. There's very few quiet moments in it. I think that would be my main criticism of the film, though, I have to say. It's all well and good having that breathless nature to it, especially at the beginning, but even the breathless bits could have been a bit breathier if you catch my drift. So when you've got that pre-title sequence, which is very well shot in my opinion, the way the camera keeps moving towards it focuses on Bond's eyes, and then you really feel like you're stuck in the middle of that sort of crash bang wallet, really dangerous. It feels like anyone could die at any second. It just needed a few longer shots to sell it a little bit more and to get the geography of the situation, because it's an extremely short pre-title sequence and that sort of follows the rest of the film. The next set of scenes for me are so good. I do love the locations in Italy. I love the stuff in Siena. I think using that amazing horse race type thing, it's almost like a metaphor, I guess. I hadn't realised that until I watched it at the cinema tonight, that whilst they're trying to get stuff out of Mr. White, that's when it's sort of just gathering in the background. And I suppose the average audience member, to be fair to them, including me, will be like, what on earth are they doing juxtaposing these two things? But it just about works when Bond is chasing that chap through the sort of alleys underneath, and you realise that they are actually underneath the arena, and it's as the chase is going on with the horses that he's doing it, so it just about works. But you just feel like you're there, you feel like you're in these places. So there's just very few scenes in it that felt like a set. I mean, maybe the sets must have been very minimal, and I always like that. That's one of the best things I think about License to Kill, is that in a way, Pinewood is great if you've got Ken Adam and all that, but if you're trying to do a more realistic Bond, you can't really get away with those larger-than-life sets. So what we get here is a selection of proper 007 locations, and ones we haven't really explored before. So yes, we've been to Italy, yes, we've been to South America, but particularly Bolivia and Haiti are really well explored. They do feel like you're really there. You feel like there's that griminess, that realistic, sun-kissed sort of backdrop that Bond is a part of. You feel the heat almost, and I think that works really well. I think I've got less of a problem with the Mathis stuff than I used to. When I first saw it, I was absolutely disgusted, and I remained that way for the next few viewings. Just watching it tonight and just focusing and relaxing, because they are really the scenes between him and Bond. They're the only time that the film gets to breathe, particularly that scene on the plane. I think it was Kevbot on Twitter who highlighted that as one of his favourite scenes, and it does just bring it back. And I didn't realise quite that there was that underlying nature that he, a bit like the audience, has been racing and racing and racing around, and he finally gets a moment to sort of breathe. And that's when he starts thinking of Vesper again. That's when he starts drinking. And he is still Bond, though. He is still able to function and have a good chat with Mathis. It is something that slightly jars with me, that, all the characters seem more interested in Bond's personal problems than their own. I don't really buy that as Mathis is dying, he would care that much about Bond, that his dying words would be, "Forgive Vesper." It works very well as a scene in terms of dialogue, and I do think forgiveness is something that we can all do a lot more of. So I do like it for that reason. I just don't think it particularly works after the minimal interactions we've had between the two of them and the quick turnaround we've had, because remember, this is directly after Casino Royale. The quick turnaround that Bond and Mathis have had in forgiving each other, essentially. But it's well explored, it's well played, and Mathis is a loss, really. I would have liked him to appear in more films. But of course, the big moment with which Rob will chat about, I'm sure that he'll be chatted about in this episode and many times, the binning Mathis and robbing him scene. So maybe because I can never quite remember how it goes, I had forgotten that Bond, even worse than that perhaps, uses Mathis as a human shield to save his own skin, which is pretty awful. Maybe he thinks, well, he's already on his way out, but who knows? Do you think that's quite a question I'd like to ask our other listeners. Do you think Mathis would have survived? Or we don't know, because they deliberately tortured him and put in the boot. I don't know whether they assumed he was dead, but that's interesting to see whether he could have survived. But obviously after those other guards shot him, he had no chance. The binning thing is a bit, it just doesn't sit right with me, the way it's dealt with. I understand that in real life that would be what you do, because Bond, of course, is off-grid now. M's not helping him. His cards have been declined. But how did he get to Mathis's on that speedboat in the beautiful Italian sort of lakes? And
I don't quite understand how that's easy for him, but now he's prepared to rob that same guy to get some money. Anyway, it's maybe that's one of the things that, you know, people don't like, the sort of plot holes. But I don't think the plot holes in the film are as bad as everybody says. I think it just about works. And there's a heck of a lot going on in a very short time. We've got the subplot of Camille, who's a good, interesting character, and I don't really think they've done a character like her before. So she's almost like a main Bond girl in terms of screen time, in terms of proportion of screen time, but a secondary Bond girl in that her role is not to really sort of save the day with Bond. She does sort of help him along the way more and more, but it's quite clear at the end that, unlike Melina, Bond is quite happy for her to kill the general. You know, he's like, yeah, go for it, because that is the kind of character this Daniel Craig incarnation of Bond is. He is very, very happy to encourage that, and it's pretty awful what he's done to her family, and he's a pretty underrated character. You know, I never hear anyone speaking about him in terms of, you know, the villains and everything, but he's realistic, and I liked his performance. I did like the whole corruption side of things, and that again makes me think of License to Kill. I thought David Arnold's music shone much better on the big screen tonight, because it's difficult for David Arnold when he's got not as many minutes to fill. He perhaps is still shying away from using the Bond theme, because at the end of Casino Royale it gave him full license with the name's Bond, James Bond, but he can't exactly just sort of do that again, because this is a sort of continuation of that, which sort of negates the ending a little bit, in my view, that Bond is back, because no, he's just continuing from where he left off. But the David Arnold music, particularly in Bolivia with the panpipes, there's a lot of Spanish guitar. It's quite different to what we've heard before, and it's very of that era of sort of Mexican Spanish films like Babel. I think that won the Oscar for Best Score. It's that sort of wistful guitar, and it works quite well for those scenes. I am really, really obsessed with the scenes in Bregenz in Austria. Desperate to go there. I don't know whether any of the Bond fans have. I've not really seen anyone comment about that. And it sort of links it into that aspirational quality of dressing up in a tux and wandering around an opera, an outdoor opera with an amazing set. And yeah, it does have echoes of Hannibal, which is one of my favourite ever films. Not just because Giancarlo Giannini's in it, but it's just got that lovely outdoor opera feel to it, where one thing's going on the stage that's quite tragic and scary, and of course it's done. It's a bit arty that the action is being done at the same time, and all you hear is the music. You lose the sound effects. It's a great idea. It's just not as well executed as it should have been. So I do think that the action when Bond is shooting those guards inside the opera house, it could have been done a bit slower. There could have been slow motion even. I would have forgiven him for going all Tamahori for a few seconds there, Mark Forster. But I do generally think that the sort of almost Eon and Barbara Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson and Daniel Craig, they're a bit defensive of this film. They're like, sorry, you know, it was the writer's strike. Sorry, it was so bad. And you're like, no, it's not that bad. You be proud of it, and you don't need to make excuses for it. Of course, it was never going to live up to Casino Royale, because if it's a continuation, it would only ever get, it's not like a Empire Strikes Back a few years later where everyone's like, actually, it's better than the original. It's a much different beast, because you are doing a direct continuation. You're sort of trying to tie up loose ends without really daring to start new storylines. I think from watching them both at the cinema within the space of a few days, the whole Algerian love knot, that has really come into the fore. I was always aware of it, and Jennifer's a massive fan of it because it is beautiful, but it's a symbol, isn't it? And the way that's the final shot of it in the snow, I thought was very effective. It's not Bond. I mean, it doesn't feel like, you know, keeping the British end up, sir, or he's just attempting re-entry. But it's storytelling, and it works for the film it is. That is what I've come to accept from Quantum of Solace. I was excited to watch it tonight. I've really, really enjoyed it. I know I'm alone in that amongst the really 007, quite a lot of the Bond community, but I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts. And yeah, keep listening to these. Keep sending us your audio. We love it. We've not really done much focus on Quantum of Solace, but we will do, I'm sure, in the years to come. See you later, guys.
So that's what she meant. I hope you can trust these men. Just a moment. It's Tanner.
Yes. We've got the girl downstairs. She says to tell you she's sorry, but this is not her fight.
It isn't. Let her go.
She isn't our concern.
I'm disappointed.
You are?
How much oil did the Americans promise you?
This isn't about oil.
Well, that's good, because there isn't any.
It's about trust. You said you weren't motivated by revenge.
I'm motivated by my duty.
No. I think you're so blinded by inconsolable rage that you don't care who you hurt. When you can't tell your friends from your enemies, it's time to go. You might like to tell her your theory about there being no oil. Her lungs are full of it.
It was green.
No doubt, but why?
It's just misdirection.
I mean, why her, Bond? She was just supposed to send you home. She worked in an office, collecting reports. Look how well your charm works, James. They'll do anything for you, won't they? How many is that now? You're removed from duty and suspended, pending further investigation. You'll give whatever weapons you have to these men and leave with them now.
Well, this episode is clearly twice as long as the film, so make way for Quantum of Solace on the big screen, part two.
Really, the best.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.